WUSB with your concert billboard update for Saturday, February the 22nd. Tonight, we have David Benoit and The Story appearing at IMAX, Dixie Dregs at The Ritz, Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers at Roseland, The Slam Jammers at the Emerald Pub, and The Toasters and Native Son at the New Frontier. For Sunday, February the 23rd, Dire Straits will be appearing at the Netherlands, and for Wednesday, February the 26th, Dire Straits will be playing at Madison Square Garden, and Kenny Neal will be appearing at Manny's Car Wash. For Thursday, February the 27th, Maggie's Dream and Family Stand will be playing at the Marquee, and Skinnerbox will be at Nightbreed. For Friday, February the 28th, Ice-T, Body Count, and Hardcore will be at the Ritz, and the Scaffolds will be at Eagles Valley. For Saturday, February the 29th, Skinnerbox will be appearing at the New Frontier. For Wednesday, March the 4th, Jesse Mason will be appearing at Western Music Fair, and Shakespeare will be at the Marquee. And for Friday, March the 6th, Brian Boitano and Katarina Witt will be appearing at Madison Square Garden. And alto saxophonist Lee Konitz will be at the Stoller Center on Saturday, March the 7th. For Tuesday, March the 10th, the Allman Brothers Band will be at the Beacon Theater. And for Wednesday, March 11th, we have Tanya Tucker and Mark Colley at Westbury Music Fair, and Mr. Big and Tall Stories at the Ritz. If you would like to stay in tune with concert information, you can hear us 7 days a week, weekdays at 3 and 9 a.m. and 4:30 and 10 p.m., and weekends at noon and at midnight. If you have any questions regarding upcoming concerts, please call us at 632-690.1. Once again, this is Rose signing off on 90.1 WUSB, Stony Brook.
Hello. Seb, this is where you record what departments are to be open. Okay?
Thank you for calling.
Don't make me laugh, thank you. Snakes on the highway. Snakes become part of the flattened fauna more commonly than their off-road numbers might indicate. Some herpetologists have suggested that nearly all snakes in heavily traveled parts of the country have found their way onto the road permanently, with a resultant reduction in their numbers off the road. Being cold-blooded, snakes snakes will seek out warm places as the daily temperature cools, especially in the spring and fall. Before highways were built, they sought out large, flat, sun-warmed rocks and stayed warm through the night. When asphalt and concrete highways were built, snakes must have felt grateful to the creators of such magnificent flat rocks, at least until the first car passed. In the golden age of herpetology, now long past, collectors could go out on new roads almost any spring or fall night and expect to find a satisfactory cross-section of live basking snakes. With increasing traffic, the only cross-sections to be found on the road are individual snakes that dozed off evenings on the warm asphalt. A reduction in snake numbers has paralleled the increase in highway construction. The snakes that remain have not yet come to terms with the automobile. Only the burrowing snakes are increasing in numbers. Snakes present the most serious identification problem to be found on the road. Flattened snakes seldom show their colors to anyone who can't conduct a minute examination. Or perhaps that's minute examination, depending on traffic. Head shape and the presence or absence of specially shaped or divided individual scales do not survive the transition to flat. General body shape is similar for all snakes, from the largest bull snake, 8 feet long maximum, to the smallest ringneck snake, less than 1 foot long. All snakes have a thick end and a thin end, with a more or less gradual taper in between. The challenge is to distinguish snakes as a group from any of the numerous long, narrow, non-animal objects that litter the highways. Tree branches, bits of wire, cable, or rope, and long, thin fragments of tire tread may occasionally mimic snakes on the road. Precise observation of shape will nearly always separate snakes from other artifacts. Snakes, even when thoroughly flattened, are smooth for nearly their entire length and on the ends as well. Artifacts, however, will show frayed edges or ends in almost every case. And most artifacts will be of nearly uniform diameter for their whole length, while snakes are variously but consistently tapered. Unlike with live snakes, you need not approach road snakes warily. No flattened snake is likely to attack, and very few of them are poisonous. However, do not stick your finger in the mouth of even the flattest snake. Selections from Flattened Fauna, a field guide to common animals of roads, streets, and highways, by Roger M. Knutson, and at least half of his last name is correct. Why an animal is on the road and what it was doing there a few hours or days earlier are recorded in its flat remains as surely as the history of a tree is recorded in its annual rings. Now, who is this guy? Roger M. Knutson has been teaching biology for 25 years. As a biologist, much of his work takes him on the road, where the flattened fauna made him look at the study of animals in an entirely new perspective. He currently teaches in the biology department at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. And in addition to snakes, you can find out all about birds, and urban birds and rural birds, road turtles, road toads, alligators even. There's even a section on alligators. And a most impressive death list for your own personal use of up to 57 animals. You can check out the location, highway number, milepost, and condition. That is recent, old, or scraps only. Flattened fauna. Put out on 10 Speed Press, 1987. And there are some impressive silhouettes of, in case you find a smear on the road, you'll know exactly what it is by cross-referencing it with this. We'll be looking at future editions of this program. We'll focus on other types of animals. The program is Brain Damage. And that's something you don't have to wait around to figure out why. Two phone numbers tonight, 632-6901, 632-6500. And we're ready, willing, and eager to talk about just about anything within reason. Some fun news items of the day, and we always read the news items of the day, so if you're on the phone waiting, don't be impatient, because this is a part of the program, an important part of the program. First, we start with the news. First, we get rid of the music. There we go. A Pentagon draft study reportedly reveals the Allied bombing raids during the Gulf War did a lot more damage to Iraq's civilian infrastructure than intended. Yes, the wake-up call has finally come into the Associated Press. Isn't that something? Nearly a year and a half after it should have. According to a report in Sunday's New York Times, some air units did not get targeting guidelines because of a communications breakdown. Unfortunately, that's all the details we have. It's kind of like the TASS news agency here, but I'm sure in 6 months or so we'll have another sentence to report. The political spotlight is on Maine Sunday, where voters will be gathering for presidential caucuses. The two top finishers in the New Hampshire Democratic presidential primary, Paul Tsongas and Bill Clinton, made last-minute campaign stops on Saturday, and Jerry Brown wrapped up a week-long stump through the state. And on the Republican side, neither President Bush nor Pat Buchanan was in Maine on Saturday. In Tampa, Florida, about 2 dozen Bush supporters walked out of a GOP dinner in the middle of a Buchanan speech after one man shouted that he didn't come to hear Bush criticized. What do you suppose this guy went to a Buchanan dinner to hear? You know, the latest scores from the Olympics or something? I mean, Buchanan is probably going to criticize Bush. It's a good chance, you know? You probably put money on it. Well, they walked out saying they didn't want to hear that kind of thing, and that sparked competing boos and cheers. It's the equivalent of standing in front of tanks in Beijing, but it's the best we can get here. Thousands of mourners have given a final salute to Salvadoran right-wing military death squad leader Roberto Dabuson. They don't say that here. I don't know why they don't say that. He died Thursday of cancer. In his later years, all of a sudden we started calling him a charismatic leader and sort of forgiving his past. But, what the hell, the guy's dead. I guess we can all be good sports. Exiled Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide and members of the Haitian Parliament resumed negotiations. Actually, they will resume negotiations tomorrow in Washington. An Organization of American States negotiator says they made some progress Saturday. However, Haitian military and interim government leaders are not taking part in the talks, which means that they don't do all that much good, do they? Now, let's turn to a rather unusual news source here. And I say unusual because this has never been a news source before, I don't think. TV Guide. That's right. I'm holding TV Guide in my hands because this week they actually had an article that was fairly interesting concerning the Gulf War, concerning what is known as fake news. What is fake news? Well, it's when you see something on the CBS Evening News with Dan Rather and you think it's news, but it's really, really public relations. Something put out professionally by professionals. And really, the only purpose is to fool people, to make people think something. It's kind of like those Maxwell House news items that you see on TV sometimes. They have them for all kinds of huge corporations where they pretend they're reporters, and they're all saying the same thing about how marvelous this particular product is. And you have to be a real dimwit not to realize that it's a commercial. So apparently there's quite a few real dimwits in network news that either are too stupid or too lazy to seek out the facts themselves. Now, this is an interesting bit about the war that folks here at USB and folks at Pacifica were saying from day one. They were saying, this is propaganda. Well, guess what, folks? It was propaganda. Lots of it was. By now, referring to the article here, by now it is well known that some portions of the Persian Gulf War effort were stage-managed in an effort to rally public opinion for military action against Iraq. The two leading television news magazines, ABC's 2020 and CBS's 60 Minutes, devoted segments last month to the fact that an emotional appeal in 1990 before a congressional caucus hearing, supposedly by an anonymous Kuwaiti refugee girl called Nayira, was in fact delivered by the daughter of Kuwait's ambassador to the U.S. Both stories followed a New York Times op-ed piece that exposed Nayira's true identity by John R. MacArthur, publisher of Harper's Magazine. Further, it was revealed that the public relations firm of Hill and Knowlton, headed at the time by Craig Fuller, former chief of staff to George Bush when he was vice president, helped to package and rehearse the young woman's appearance on behalf of their client. The client was Citizens for a Free Kuwait, an exile organization primarily funded by the Emir of Kuwait. Nayira's testimony was that Iraqi soldiers had stormed hospitals and torn newborn babies from their incubators, leaving them to die. Her story, which received wide network coverage and was invoked on numerous occasions by President Bush, had in fact been rehearsed before video cameras by Hill and Knowlton. But according to Kuwaiti doctors interviewed by 2020 and 60 Minutes, no such incident had occurred. If this had been the only occurrence of packaged war reporting broadcast in the heat of war hysteria, it might be excusable. But what I found during my long stint in Saudi Arabia, I was a consultant for both PBS's Frontline and England's Thames Television, was a far more systematic manipulation of news by the PR firm than is generally known. Following the August 1990 invasion of Kuwait by Iraq, refugees with stories about conditions in their country were selected and coached by Hill and Knowlton. Those with the most compelling tales, and the ones most in keeping with the agenda of Hill and Knowlton's client, were made available to news organizations, thus limiting journalists' ability to independently assess claims of brutalities. Indeed, the PR firm's operatives were given free rein to travel unescorted throughout Saudi Arabia, while journalists were severely restricted. Hill and Knowlton also was the source for a large number of the amateur videos shot inside Kuwait and smuggled out. The videos were collected, screened, and edited at the PR firm's TV studios in the Saudi capital, Riyadh, and in the coastal city of Dharan. The packaged videotapes were then distributed free of charge to the networks, ostensibly by Citizens for a Free Kuwait. In the U.S., Hill and Knowlton also distributed the tapes to affiliated and independent stations. A second woman who was identified as simply another Kuwaiti refugee and who made an appearance before a widely televised session of the U.N. Security Council on November 27, 1990, turned out to be a close relative of a senior Kuwaiti official. The woman, Fatima Fahid, came before the world body as it was debating the use of force to oust the Iraqis from Kuwait. She gave harrowing details of Iraqi atrocities inside her country. What was not reported is that Fahid was, in fact, the wife of Suleiman al-Mutawa, Kuwaiti's Kuwait's Minister of Planning and herself a well-known TV personality in Kuwait. Now listen to this. Surprised that a high-profile Kuwaiti could be labeled and accepted as just another refugee, I asked one of the leaders of Citizens for a Free Kuwait, Fazi al-Sultan, why Fahid had been chosen to speak to the UN. And the answer? Because of her professional experience. She is more believable. An actress more believable than a real person. Like the story related by Naira, Fahid's testimony was not necessarily true. In testifying to the UN, she implied that her information was firsthand. Such stories I personally have experienced, she said, but when I had interviewed her in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, before her UN appearance, she told me that she had no firsthand knowledge of the events she was describing. Some weeks later, in advance of her UN testimony, she and other witnesses were coached, including rehearsals, wardrobe, and prepared scripts, extensively by employees of Hill and Knowlton. A tape from inside Kuwait supplied to journalists by the PR firm before the U.S.-led invasion purported to show peaceful Kuwaiti demonstrators being fired upon by the occupying Iraqi troops. But on the ground in Saudi Arabia, I managed to interview a Kuwaiti refugee present at the demonstration whose story was quite different. The man, a Kuwaiti policeman, said that no demonstrators were injured and the gunshots captured on tape were in fact those of Iraqi troops firing on nearby resistance fighters who had fired first at the Iraqis. When I asked him to appear on camera and tell the true story, he refused. I do not want to harm the resistance, he said. Most likely, he did not want to harm himself. Right. None of this is to suggest that the Iraqis did not perpetrate atrocities while occupying Kuwait, nor does it underestimate the difficulties facing the media in obtaining original material under censorship conditions. However, these examples are but a few of the incidents of outright misinformation that found their way onto the network news. It is an inescapable fact that much of what Americans saw on their news broadcasts, especially leading up to the Allied offensive against Iraqi-occupied Kuwait, was in large measure the contrivance of a public relations firm. How does that make you feel, folks? Were you taken in? Did you have doubts? Were you afraid to have doubts? Well, a lot of us certainly took some heat for having doubts, but in the end, you know, those doubts always turn out to be, well, not always well-founded, but sometimes well-founded, most always healthy. Always have doubts when somebody tells you something in an authoritative tone of voice. That's what I always say. Okay. One more, actually, two more brief items, which I think people should find rather disturbing. I always come up with these disturbing items. Okay. Page one of today's New York Times. Read the headline, Head of Endowment for the Arts is forced from his post by Bush. Okay, not too significant in itself. But what if I was to tell you that George Bush had nothing at all to do with that? It was really Patrick Buchanan. Ah, your ears have perked up a bit. Patrick Buchanan being responsible for forcing the head of the Endowment for the Arts out of office? Well, his name was John Frohnmayer, the chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts. He was forced out of his job yesterday, and they're calling it a casualty of the political wars. President Bush's decision to call for Mr. Frohnmayer's resignation came amid reports that Patrick Buchanan, the president's conservative challenger, would make an issue of Mr. Bush's support of the arts endowment as he campaigned in the South. So this is what he did to get out of that particular situation. Listen to how Pat Buchanan describes the National Endowment for the Arts. The upholstered playpen of the arts and crafts auxiliary of the Eastern liberal establishment. So fear of a Buchanan challenge has led to his ouster. That's pretty shocking and pretty shameful. And there's one other thing that we need to draw some attention to. This didn't make it to page one. This was on page six. Federal official apologizes for remarks on inner cities. The Bush administration's top mental health official who could use a little treatment himself, Dr. Frederick Goodwin, has apologized for remarks that he said had been seen by some people as insensitive to blacks. Now, what were these comments that some people might think were insensitive to blacks? Well, he said, and I quote, "If you look, for example, at male monkeys, especially in the wild, roughly half of them survive to adulthood. The other half die by violence. That's the natural way of it for males, to knock each other off. And in fact, there are some interesting evolutionary implications of that, because the same hyper-aggressive monkeys who kill each other are also hypersexual, so they copulate more, and therefore they reproduce more to offset the fact that half of them are dying. Now, one could say that if some of the loss of social structure in this society, and particularly within the high-impact inner-city areas, has removed some of the civilizing evolutionary things that we have built up, and that maybe it isn't just the careless use of the word when people call certain areas of certain cities jungles, that we may have gone back to what might be more natural without all the social controls that we have imposed upon ourselves as a civilization over thousands of years in our own evolution. This just reminds us that although we look at individual factors and we look at biological differences and we look at genetic differences, the loss of structure in society is probably why we are dealing with this issue." Well, Dr. Goodwin has now said that the remarks were insensitive and careless. And needless to say, he did not resign. That's the nature of the world today as we see it. It's 12:31. Program is Brain Damage Now More Than Ever. 632-6901 is our telephone number. 632-6500 is our other number. But right now you probably get a busy signal on both of them. But keep trying, because that's the only way you're going to succeed. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing? Since we're on the topic of questionable reporting, I have something you might find interesting.
Okay.
All right, here's something that I found kind of shady. All right, listen to this. I was thumbing through Newsday the other night, and I found an article that says, get this headline, "Economic Recession Hits Home for Bush." Now, it goes on to explain about how Bush has actually filed for bankruptcy on a home he owned in Texas.
I heard something about the place where he resides filing for bankruptcy. I'm not quite sure what that means. Is it Bush himself that's making the filing?
Yes. No, I don't...
That's got to make you a bit uneasy, then, when your own president does something like that.
Well, the way I see it, I think it's just public relations. You know, he's trying to see, like... do you know what I'm getting at?
Well, yeah, like when he had the hurricane hit his home in Maine. That was public relations, too. That showed that he was vulnerable. When he threw up in the lap of the Japanese prime minister,
well,
that showed he was human.
Well, he probably smashed it down with his hammer.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the election's coming up, all right? And I think what he's trying to do is make it look like he's more on the common people. You know, he's suffering with the American people. He's not above everybody's hardship.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's above their intelligence, you know. I think a lot of people are going to see through that.
Well, exactly. So, anyway, since you're on the topic of shady reporting.
It's a good example of something shady, for sure.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. Now, were you surprised at all by the outcome of Tuesday's primary?
Not at all.
You didn't think Buchanan wouldn't get that much?
Well, I don't particularly care for either candidates, but yeah, Bush is, he really messed up this one.
Uh-huh.
Say that much right now. I'd like to see, man, you should run for president.
Well, I would, except it takes time, I hear, you know? Not only the running, but the office itself. You have to, like, go to Washington and, you know, those kind of things.
Who says?
Well, that's what they, I don't know. Nobody really said it, just a rumor.
You can set up office right in the radio station, man.
Well, if I could do that, maybe I would. You know, thanks for putting the thought in my head.
You should think about it.
I will. Well, wait, haven't I missed a deadline or something?
Well,
I'll give it some thought, I promise.
Check this out. All right, Pickle. And hey, Dan, what's happening? And check this out. Ciao.
Uh-huh. Okay, we may never know what that meant. 632-6901. Good morning. Anybody there? You finished? No. Good morning. Go on, wake up. Are you there?
Oh, yeah.
How you doing?
Oh, hello. Last week, a skater called in about him and his friend were at Stony Brook campus, and they were, one of his friends was physically harassed by a security guard.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm not going to reveal my name, but I was one of the security guards who was involved in an incident.
Uh-huh.
And I am a security guard on Stony Brook campus. I've been there for quite a few years.
You work for public safety? Or you?
That's it.
Okay.
And like I said, I'm not going to reveal my name.
Okay.
Over the air, you know.
Okay. You want to tell us what happened?
Well, I want to give you my side of the story. He said they weren't skating, but we got a call from a boss to go over there. So we went over there to see what was going on, and I don't think they were skating, but our orders were to take their boards away and to make the parents come and get them, which we did.
Uh-huh.
But the thing about the fight is, he made it sound like all I did to him is, well, really, the skater, like, you know, he did something to me, too. I went to get his board, and, you know, we got into, a violent struggle, and then he punched me in my stomach, and, like, he tried to run, so I caught him, and then, like, I passed him around for a little while. We were wrestling a match, and then, like, he punched me in my eye, and he punched me in my stomach. It hurt. My gut's fat. I breathed on him. It stunk.
Uh-huh. Somehow I get the feeling that wasn't really a security person. And there's several reasons I believe that. But if I told you what they were, then the next person that called up and tried to do that would know what they were and would get it right. But rather than deface our esteemed public safety people. Oh, who's the moron? Who's the moron that's painting? All right, I want her strung up, okay? I want her strung up. I want to see her tied to a wall or something. Huh. Interrupt my show like that. Come right through on the phone. It's an outrage. It's an outrage. Take care of her, please. Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, I got a couple questions and comments. This
yeah.
Is Andrew Goldberger.
Hi, Andrew Goldberger. Yeah, right. That's you. Okay, go ahead.
Anyway.
I believe it's you. Don't worry.
If con is the opposite of pro, then what is the opposite of progress?
Congress. Old joke.
All right.
It's an old joke, but, you know, it's still funny, I guess. But it's an old joke.
I just was thinking about that, and, you know.
Yeah. Okay. And do you have any other words of wisdom besides that one?
Yes. The chances of a buttered piece of bread landing on the buttered side of your carpeting directly proportionate to the price of the carpet.
Are you reading from some kind of book of witty sayings or something?
No. I was just thinking.
It's all coming out of your head, huh?
Yeah. Never play leapfrog with a unicorn.
You see, these are all things I've heard before. I don't know where I've heard them. It's, you know.
Well, someone wrote a book, and it's called The Guide to Terrorism. And so I said to call up a radio show and say this. Nowadays, an honest politician is one who, when bought, stays bought.
What happens if you attach a piece of buttered bread to a cat, and you have the buttered bread facing up and the cat's legs facing down, then you throw the cat off of a building? What do you get then? Which way does it land?
Flat.
Well, let's say you throw it off only one story, then. Let's say you're a kind person. How does it land then? It doesn't go splat.
I don't know.
Well, you have a cat?
I don't know.
Well, there are these things with whiskers that walk around and get annoying.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you think about that, Andrew, and we'll go on to another call here. Good morning.
Well?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I want to make the point that, Underdog, you know the cartoon character?
Yeah, I know him well.
He doesn't get enough credit as a superhero.
Of course, he's an underdog. That's why.
Well, but he should get credit as a superhero. People consider him a cartoon character, not a superhero.
But that's part of the allure of being underdog, is the fact that he doesn't get enough credit.
But I think he'd end the fight pretty easy.
Uh-huh.
I know he could. I think that'd be a good fight. He could take Batman pretty easy.
This has been bothering you a lot, I can tell.
But yeah.
Well,
yeah, because he really deserves credit as a superhero. He's not a cartoon character.
Well, who's in charge of giving out that credit anyway? Is there some kind of a league that does that?
But I just want to bring it to everybody's attention.
Okay, well, who shall we send our petitions to? That's what I'm trying to find out.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay, well, look into that, all right?
Yeah, I just want to say my name's Ishmael, and I want to say hi to Pickle and Leroy and the Peanut Brittle Gang. And I just want to say, kiss my black ass.
All right, thanks very much for saying that. Good morning.
Hello?
I said good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I liked your intro today.
Well, thank you.
You are politically very different from Matt.
Well, yeah, I like to think I'm politically different from most people.
No, but blame me. Like, Matt, like, was a big war supporter, and I got into a big conversation with him last week on it. He really thought it was justified action and all, that economic interest were at stake and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well. Not too bad, but I mean, he's a reasonable enough person to listen to another side of the story.
Right. So what's your side of the story?
More along your lines, but with the belief that I think that that both Bush and Saddam Hussein sort of had their third-party contacts, and in between them, they struck a deal. Like Saddam Hussein said, well, I won't throw chemical weapons or use any of my serious weapons or have a military strategy if you don't take over my country and take Baghdad and bump me off. And in general, I think they had sort of an agreement.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it seems like you got a pretty good deal there. And
it sounds kind of silly, but think about it. The best weapons of Iraq weren't used. Chemical weapons weren't used.
True.
And Iraq was not taken over either, despite all the rhetoric. Seriously.
The chemical weapons weren't used because the Iraqis wanted to save those for themselves.
Well,
to use on their own people. That's really where they're most effective. The Soviets almost used it on their own people during the coup. So that's where chemical weapons are used mostly, you know, within borders, not outside of borders.
They probably could have been used, though, as pretty effectively, though.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
I don't think so. I don't think they would have been used very effectively, because there was too much opposing them, and any use of chemical weapons at all would have provoked such a response that even, you know, bleeding heart liberals would have supported the war at that point.
Well, the weapons that were already used, though, were very, very serious. Probably a nuclear weapon would have been used, and it probably would have elicited sympathy for them, though.
Uh-huh.
Just personal speculation.
Yeah.
Anyway, one thing for TV Guide. I saw a thing, something a few years ago that was pretty good.
And? What was it?
It was the only story I thought was pretty decent. It was on the enlightenment of the TV characters at that time. The main ones being Archie Bunker, Loretta Swit, and Fonzie.
They
were becoming
go.
Intellectual and caring and whatnot. But outside of that, it's kind of interesting to use TV Guide as a source.
Well, it is, and I don't usually do it. I try not to do that, but they really had something interesting to say. What bothers me most, though, is the fact that they say it in such a way that, yeah, you know, we know this because we're good reporters. And the fact of the matter is, you know, everybody fell for this. All the main reporters didn't question things enough. And now it's practically being handed to them on a plate, so they have to admit that there was, in fact, some deception going on. But, you know, they accepted the videotapes from this PR firm. They knew back then it was PR. So that was the time to say something, not, you know, a year later.
Yeah, to switch to another topic, not trying to jump to be nasty, but I think there should be, like, a 92 version of Washington Bullets by The Clash, incorporating something from the Iraq War.
Yeah, well, they'd have to update that song quite a bit, because the whole premise of the song was that the United States didn't interfere in Nicaragua. And they certainly did after that song came out.
Because you were playing some of the tracks on that, I picked up the CD set. It is fantastic. I wasn't that familiar with The Clash before, and you definitely have good taste.
The Clash on Broadway, yes. I recommend that. Triple CD. Recommend that to anybody. If you don't know much of The Clash, that's certainly something you want to introduce yourself to.
But the Washington Bullets song was pretty optimistic, and of course, as you say, in the suggestion of no interference.
Right.
And I guess that was pre-Reagan, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, it was. I think that came out just around when Carter was leaving office. So it.
Lewis is the best way.
Well, I think, you know, a cultural statement. What do you define as a cultural statement?
Well, to make the new music, to make the new poetry, the new literature, the new philosophy, all of the above, possibly a new golden age.
Well, that's culture. You know, that's fine if you're not preaching to the converted. You know, it's not just the same group that hears the same thing over and over again. You have to try and reach people, and you know, you do that through politics as well as through art. And, you know, it's a battleground in both arenas. So I would say, you know, I don't want to, you know, be wishy-washy here, but I would say a little bit of both. A lot of both, actually.
Very good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Democrats have got to be, you know, they got to stop being so, you know, taking everything on the chin. They have to speak out a little louder.
I think we'll ever get to the point that you have Democrats like Steve Solars agreeing with a lot of right-wing policies, and that enough of them will agree with all the Republican policies that suddenly both parties will not be a viable choice. You'll have, and the average voter will have to reach to a more extreme party to be able to get their choice.
Well, it would sure be nice to see some alternative to the Democrats and the Republicans, which in many cases do resemble each other a little too much. You know, because they're also they're ingrained into the same system, you know, and they know how the other side works so well that, you know, they kind of become the other side themselves. We need some kind of variety.
One other thing that I'm wondering what you think on the Republican primary on terms of not allowing Buchanan or Duke to be allowed in the primaries. I think that would really help. Like vent a lot of honesty from the Republicans that to actually see how many people really do support Buchanan and David Duke in a lot of these states. I think it'd be useful.
Yeah, I would like to see that too. I mean, you could say these people are dangerous and they shouldn't be allowed in, but of course they should be allowed in. If people want to vote for them, then we should ask ourselves, why are people voting for clowns like these, you know?
It would be doubtful that somebody like David Duke would get in power anyway, but
he is
like,
in power.
He's like Texas, he'd have
he's in power
whatever,
in his own
5%, and maybe Connecticut might be surprising and get like 40%.
See, he's in power in his own way, in his own area. You know, he's not the president, or he's not a senator, but he still has power, a lot more power than he had 10 years ago, you know? And he got it, you know, in a legal way, but what's disturbing is why. You know, we have to ask ourselves why that happened. How did it happen? You know, and you can't stop something like that from happening, but you have to understand why it happens. It's like anything else.
Right. Well, I agree. And I'll allow some more callers to come on. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901, 632-6500. Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Not much.
And the other day, I was sitting down watching the news with my peanut brittle, and I found out they got Dick Yoke from the Rich Dad.
From what?
From Bewitched.
Oh, yeah, the husband on Bewitched. Yeah, I heard about that.
Well, it's heartbroken.
Well, I guess it's a blow to all of us.
Yeah, I guess so. Bewitched is my favorite television show. I love watching the reruns.
Well, you can still do that.
I know, but
you haven't made a new episode of Bewitched in a good long time.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, you watched it, and you found out the main thing, and it's really upsetting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, you know, I have just as much trouble believing that those people are really alive in the first place.
Yeah.
So when they die, it doesn't really, you know, affect me all that much. But I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for making that point there. It's 12:48 in the morning. All right, what do you know? It's been a long time. But, like the Democrats, important questions occasionally make comebacks. And what could be a more important question than something that we each ask every single day of the week? And that is, gosh darn it all, what's for lunch?
Good morning. Today, Friday, February 21st, at all cafeterias, oatmeal, French waffles, hash browns, scrambled egg, ham, and eggs to water. Lunch is Italian chicken soup, chicken and rice burrito, fettuccine alfredo, vegetable enchilada, refried beans, broccoli cuts, hot dogs with toppings, deli, and a salad bar. Dinner is Italian chicken soup, baked macaroni, baked chicken, fisherman stew, red bliss potatoes, rosemary, Florentine vegetables, hot dogs, and a salad bar. The Fanny Bryce Food Mall is closed tonight. Thanks again for calling the FSA hotline.
And by the way, we don't censor that. I don't know who started that rumor. But that's brought to you exactly as it's written. All right, now that we've gotten that out of the way, we all know what's being fed to us. Let's get some feedback, huh? How's that? 632-6901, area code 516. Alternative number 632-6500, area code 415. No, that's California, I'm sorry. Area code 516 as well for that one, but I'm sure you don't have to be a physics major to figure that out. Good morning.
Hello?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm great.
You great?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear that you're great.
You happen to go to Smith Haven Mall today?
Did I go to Smith Haven Mall today? No, I did not go to Smith Haven Mall today or any other day this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while.
Do you know that, you know Amazing Jonathan from Ruckus?
Amazing Jonathan from what?
Ruckus on Channel 4, I think it used to be on. I think it's off now.
Well, I haven't watched Channel 4 in a while either, but I guess I'm just out of it.
He was at the mall.
Well, he's got to do his shopping too, I guess.
Everybody was following him like he was a superstar.
Well, I don't know. I guess maybe he was.
It was weird.
Imagine how he felt.
He waved to us. Me and my friend.
He was probably saying, get away from me.
No.
Or how did he wave? Did he wave starting?
It's like that little tinkly wave he always does, you know?
Oh, the tinkly wave. Yeah, I know the kind. It's a Thanksgiving Day Parade wave.
He was on Channel 12.
I thought you said he was on Channel 4.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was on the news because he's out here now. He's doing a show and he's something.
Okay, well, one of his greatest fans there.
Yeah, oh, he's cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all right. Well, whip it fly, make it crap.
All right, good morning. Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello.
Yes, I'm here. How you doing? You're on the air.
Hi. I have two questions.
Okay.
Two things. I want to say hi to Jimmy out there. It's James.
Hey, Jimmy. James here.
And
okay.
Another thing, I want to talk about the layoffs. You know, the layoffs and the jobs that are going down under.
54,600 jobs Long Island lost last year.
Yeah, and I'm on the list.
You're one of those, huh?
Yep.
Wow, you could get everybody together and go to a baseball game and have a sold-out stadium with that kind of crowd.
Yeah, right?
Wow. Must feel good to be part of a pack like that.
Yeah, right? But in a way, I feel sorry for those people that, you know, they have houses and, you know, family they have to support, and they're getting laid off, and, you know, they're going down, you know, they're going, it's so bad, so
uh-huh.
bad. They should knock down the people that are making millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, did you hear what just happened with Lilco, Long Island Lighting Company?
Uh-huh.
People that supply our power? They hired a bunch of consultants to tell them what was wrong with their company, and the consultants came back and said, do you know what's wrong with this company? The high-ranking executives don't make enough money, so you all should get raises.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The high-ranking executives that hired them agreed and said, you're so right.
That's not right, then.
They said, and I quote, William Catacasinos, the president of Loco, makes $450,000 a year. And they say, in order to be competitive with other electric companies, she should be making $496,000 a year.
Oh, my God.
Now, it's great to be competitive and all, but I think this is one competition we can sit out.
Yeah. That's pathetic.
Because it's going to be translated in higher rates for us. We all know that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's pathetic. They should knock them down, you know.
Knock them down a peg.
Give other kids, you know. It's too much.
That's true. It really is. Well, what do you think you can do to make a change? Do you think you have any power at all?
Well, we're fighting. See what happens, but we're fighting. But
how are you fighting?
You know, we're protesting and all that.
Uh huh. Well, you gotta make sure other people find out about what's going on. You know, if something unjust is happening, then you gotta protest so that other people see you protesting
yeah.
and say, "Hey, what's all this about?" And then you know, you inform them and you educate them.
Well, I work at Pilgrim Psychiatric Center.
That's I've seen that place. That's the place that looks like it's got all kinds of secrets. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Is it true that has a huge maze of tunnels underneath it?
Oh, yes, yes.
Wow.
Yes, it's very big, very big. But it's not, you know, when they locked it up down there because a lot of the patients were going under there, and when the employees had to go under there to get the trucks, patients were there, and we had two incidents of people being raped, two employees.
Really?
Yeah, by the patients, so they had to lock that up.
Plus, there was, a few years ago, a prison.
Yeah.
Next door.
Yeah, way in the back of the Pilgrim. But
uh-huh.
they said that they're going to be opening that up, and that all the employees at the Pilgrim around are going to be moved to the prison. and then LIDC and CI are coming to one in Brentwood.
That's Long Island Developmental Center?
Yeah.
I see. Cool. And you also used to have that building called Edgewood, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. That's been torn down.
Yeah, that's been torn down. Yeah, well, they're making a, I think they're going to be making a nursing home there.
Uh-huh.
Or something, they said.
And preserving some of the pine barrens there, too, I understand. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear you lost your job. What was your job over there?
I didn't lose it yet. I'm on the list of being laid off.
You're on the list. So when would this take effect?
May 6th.
Really? And what's the reason given for it? State budget cuts or something?
Yep.
That's the reason.
Not enough money.
That's incredible. Considering they're raising the tuition over here left and right, they should be able to have all kinds of money, but who knows where it winds up.
The people that are, you know, they're making millions of dollars, knock them down first.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. But they have to knock down the people that are making so much less money, you know.
How many people were affected by this?
From my area, it's about 60.
60 people?
60 people.
That's quite a large number.
Yeah.
So, do you have any plans? Are you going to be looking for something else?
I'm looking. I'm thinking of going to college, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Trying to go to college. Or I'm thinking else of Bible college.
Uh-huh.
I'm a teacher now. One of my church, in the church I go to.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking about going into Bible college.
Well, if you can manage either one of those, I would suggest doing that, because at least you'll be, you'll be feeding things into your head that will stay there.
Yeah.
And you'll be, experiencing something of a positive nature.
Right.
Rather than, just fretting over not having a job.
Right.
So, you don't have to have a 9-to-5 job to survive. I mean, you can survive if you're imaginative and if you have a positive attitude. You'll find a way somehow. I mean, that's not, I don't like to use that the way that the people in power use it, saying, oh, people who want to get by will get by.
Yeah.
But for your own sanity, you have to realize that sometimes it takes time for these things to work out. And if you become too self-absorbed in it, you'll go mad.
Did you read in the paper about that city guy that got killed? He was a taxi cab driver. And he got shot. He was laid off from his other job, and then he just found a taxi cab job, and then he just got shot.
Well, that happens a lot, actually, but I'm not sure which particular case this is.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, why do you bring that up?
No, I just brought it up. I didn't know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he just lost his job, and then he's just trying to support his family, and just found this job.
Yeah.
And
well, lots of times people will do dangerous things to get by.
To get by.
Yeah, but... it's rough. What can we say? You know, it's rough out there.
It's the world coming to an end soon.
Are you one of the people that honestly believe that?
I believe it. I think it is.
Uh-huh. Well, what tells you that?
Huh?
What tells you that?
Just the way that the economy, the economic and political and all that stuff, the way, everybody's losing their jobs and everything.
Yeah, but there's no more, at least it doesn't appear to be a nuclear threat from over the horizon.
No, I'm just saying, but everybody's losing their jobs. There's no money out there.
Uh-huh. I mean, there's positive things that are happening, too.
Yeah.
There's going to be negative things as well.
But we have to hope for the best. That's all we have to do.
Okay, well, good luck to you. Let us know how things turn out.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. 632-6901. That's world events affect everybody to some degree. You just have to figure out how it affects you. Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
Pretty good. I'm pretty groovy. How are you?
Just fine.
My friend Earl and I, we went to the mall today.
Well, that's good. At least you had a productive day.
We saw a really, really tall, really, really small kid. He's like up to my knees.
A small kid up to your knees. Well, that was unusual, I'll bet.
He had a mustache.
A small kid with a mustache?
Yeah.
All right.
He's like the smallest man in the world.
Smallest man in the world with a mustache. Well, then he wasn't a kid, was he? We can eliminate that word.
Well, he looked like one to me.
Okay. He looked like a kid, but he was actually a man, and he had a mustache, and he went up to your knees.
Yeah, he ran right by us. I thought I was dreaming.
Okay. So, in your dreams, you thought that you saw a man run by you in the mall with a mustache that went up to your knees.
But I wasn't dreaming, because my friend Earl was there.
Okay. So, your friend Earl?
Yeah, Earl.
Earl was there, and you weren't dreaming, and the man ran by, and you knew you were in the mall.
Yeah, that was pretty neat.
And it was neat.
Yeah, I gotta say hi to a couple people.
All right, I'm just glad we were able to share that experience together, but go ahead.
All right, I gotta say hi to Blondie and Michelle, and you're gonna call in soon. And the Fiddler,
Uh-huh. You know somebody named Blondie?
Yeah.
That must be amazing.
Really?
Yeah. No, I mean, I just think that's cool, you know somebody named Blondie.
Yeah, isn't that groovy?
Yeah. I don't know anybody named Blondie.
I mean, there's this other girl, Lime.
I knew a kid named Red once.
But Blondie, she got her hair purple now.
Oh, well, you guys still call her Blondie?
I don't know, I think about purpley.
Maybe she's, like, trying to send you a message. Not to call her Blondie anymore.
Uh-huh. Maybe she'll call in.
Maybe.
Talk to you.
Maybe.
Pretty soon.
Okay. Anyone else you want to say hi to?
The Boogeyman. Ah.
Okay, well, say goodbye to me then. Good morning.
Hello?
How you doing?
Good. Am I allowed to give out, like, a message out there to somebody?
Well, it depends what kind of message it is. What kind of message is that?
Meet me somewhere.
Well, do they know who you are?
Well, I was supposed to meet them, like, a long time ago, but I couldn't make it.
Uh-huh.
So...
Was this the meeting in the mall on Sunday at 2 o'clock? Of a few months ago that I remember?
Yeah, I think it was that,
okay,
yeah.
And I remember this. So anyone else that remembers that, well, are you going to be in the mall tomorrow at 2 o'clock?
No, not tomorrow.
Okay, when?
Saturday at 11.
Saturday at... You go to the mall in the morning?
Yeah.
I've never been in a mall in the morning.
It's empty.
It must be. Wow. I've never even thought of malls in the morning. I mean, that's quite a concept.
Yeah, because, you know, when it's too crowded. I don't like when it's too crowded.
Well, that's why you break in at night when nobody's there.
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't have said that, should I? Ming frowned at. Well, nobody knows which mall. All right? Sorry. Okay. Saturday at 11.
Yeah, it's Smith Haven Mall.
Smith Haven Mall. Okay. Be there or be square.
And that's directed to that girl, Amy.
Okay. Amy, I hope you're out there, and if anybody out there knows Amy, pass that message on to her.
And,
Why weren't you there last time?
Oh, because, I usually take a bus there.
Uh-huh.
And there's no buses on Sunday, so I couldn't get a ride.
One of those little blue buses, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate those buses.
Yeah, me too, but it's the only transportation.
Well, that's because mass transportation in this county sucks. I'll go on record as saying that. It's the worst.
Yeah.
One bus an hour, maybe, if you're lucky. And then you gotta walk a mile to get to it.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be that way.
And in the mall, in front of Journeys.
Front of Journeys?
Yeah, because, you know, the mall's big, you know. Nobody will find me.
Okay. All right. Well, and will they know you any particular way? Will you be wearing something?
I'll either have my skateboard or my black jacket, my black flight jacket.
Where they don't allow skateboards in the mall?
No, you do, but we walk it. Well, we're allowed to walk it.
Uh-huh.
And we skate outside, too, but when the guy kicks us out, we usually go back in and then go back out skating again.
I understand.
We drive him crazy.
Well, perhaps you don't want to reveal your tactics on the air, but let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
1 week from today, we'll all know.
Yeah. That'd be cool if we all went there, because, you know, we meet. You know,
oh, you're not going to get me into a mall in the morning, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. And,
okay.
I was going to say. And, oh, yeah, I like to say hi to 10 people.
10 people?
Yeah, but it's really fast, though.
Make it fast.
Okay.
10 people is a bit much. I don't even know 10 people. Come on, we're timing you.
Okay. Hi, Nadja. Hi, Kara. Hi, Rocco. Hi, Purple Blondie. Hi, Michelle.
Purple
hi, John.
Blondie.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Gary. Hi, Blake. Hi, Judd Muffin. And, Mr. Connecticut, don't call, goddammit. That's all I got to say. Bye.
It took you 13 seconds. 13 seconds for 10 names. That's more than a second for a name. That's not acceptable. Good morning.
Hey.
Don't hit touch tones. I don't need to hear touch tones. Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Well, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
I just wanted to say, I heard that guy before, Underdog.
Yeah?
I just wanted to know, did he hear that from the Howard Stern show?
What Howard Stern show? What Howard Stern? What is this?
When some girl dressed up as Underdog trying to dance and everything and saying that we should... Look at him more as a serious character than a cartoon.
Well, I guess if somebody dresses up as a cartoon character and says to treat something seriously, you got to listen to them.
Yeah. What are you up to?
Well, not much, actually. I'm sitting here behind a console, kind of trapped, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've got no place to go. I'm just locked in this room here. They won't even let me out.
By yourself?
Yeah, I'm all by myself, I guess. You might as well put it that way. Nobody around. I don't see anybody.
Yeah. I just wanted to say hi to a couple people.
Okay. If it's only a couple of people, I guess,
I'm going to say hi to Jane. What's up?
All right.
Say hi to Charlie, Rich, Julie, Paul, Kareem, Mark, and Jenna. I'm out of here.
All right. Thanks for calling. Out of here. 632-6901, 632-6500. Good morning.
Good morning.
I can hear what you say in there, by the way. Go ahead.
This is Dan and Pickle and Julie, who the first caller said hi to.
Can you all scream at once so I know there's three people?
I'm sorry?
There's three of you now.
Yeah, well, I'm Dan, first of all, and then Julie would like to say something, and I'm going to say something again, and then Pickle is going to end it.
What is this, an agenda? Okay, go ahead.
Do you mind?
No, go ahead, fine.
Yeah, okay, first.
I can just cut out of here, then. You have the whole show to yourself. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, anyway, back to Ricky.
That was it?
Okay.
That was it. Boy.
Okay, it's
I hope she's taking a breather from that.
Yeah, she is.
Okay, good.
Okay. Just one question I want to ask you. Do you know what another word for thesaurus is?
Oh, gosh, you know, I have a book at home where I can look things like that up.
Really?
But I can never find it.
Oh, man. And, you know, we really missed you last week, you know, because I think you're a really swell guy and stuff like that.
Well, I'm sorry. I just couldn't make it. I had too much work to do, but thanks, Matt. Thanks to Matt for filling in.
I know. I talked to Matt on the sports section. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, Matt's a cool guy.
Yeah, I know. Okay, one more thing before I hand the phone over to Pickle. Rick, call back if you can. That's all. Okay, here's Pickle.
Hello?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Your name's Pickle.
Yes, that's okay. My name, Pickle.
All right.
I just have a few things to say. I'd like to say hello back to Rick, and I'd like to know if there's a place that you know that I might be able to buy powdered water.
Powdered water?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting product. I can't find it anywhere.
I can't imagine. Well, try calling some stupid markets, you know? Try 7-Eleven, a Pathmark or something. Powdered water.
Yeah, it's an interesting product.
That's like non-chewing gum.
Right, it's like battery, it's like solar-powered flashlights, you know? It's really good.
Solar-powered flashlights, you got it, yeah. Well, I imagine there's a company that goes around making these kind of things. We just have to find them.
Also, there's, Rick asked me if I do my imitation of a machine gun over the radio earlier.
Okay.
So here it is.
Whoops. Shot yourself. Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, hello. My name's Tyrone.
Hi, Tyrone.
We're from the hood.
How you doing?
And I want to clear up this thing about people named Pickle.
Okay.
I know this Pickle, right? And he's in the...
You know another Pickle, or you know the particular Pickle they called us just recently?
Well, another Pickle.
Another Pickle?
Yeah, he owns a store in Macquarie's and Smith Haven Mall.
Right.
This book called Memorabilia Place. It's a real cool place. Check it out if you can. And,
McCrory's in the Smith Haven. It's one of my favorite hangouts, actually.
Yeah, and, I'd like to know if you've ever heard of a band called Flaming Underwear.
I've heard of Flaming all kinds of things, but never Flaming Underwear, no.
Well, you want to hear a little bit of that song?
A little bit of it, yeah. Well, it has a crackly sound to it. Okay. I like the quiet part. Well, this is just wonderful. Okay, well, that was Flaming Underwear there with their latest hit single. Thanks so much for sharing that with us. Just goes to show that USB will give anybody a break when they need it. Good morning.
Yeah, how you doing?
Yeah. Ask me later.
You're having a wild night tonight. Some of these calls coming in are really...
About as wild as I can handle, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to run something by you. How you felt about the recent... deportation of...
Shut that, please. Sorry. Somebody
okay.
just came in.
I want to know how you felt about the recent deportation of Joe Daugherty.
Oh, the IRA guy.
Yeah.
Well, I know nobody was really surprised by it, and it was done kind of sneakily, but nobody was surprised that it was done kind of sneakily.
I know just recently now they've been coming out with a couple things. I know D'Amato made reference to it, and there was also... somebody else in the British government had said that back in Thatcher, when Thatcher was running things over there, it was a kind of a somewhat informal agreement between Reagan and her about when we had that airstrike on Libya, that supposedly for allowing us to use their bases to launch our planes, that was the deal that was, you know, he was thrown in on it, supposedly. Because I had wondered why they had fought this so very hard. Now, I've been involved in Irish Northern Aid. I've had some dealings with a little more of what's really going on. And I tell you, it seems like... I don't know how the average American feels about this, but because what the government has done to get him, they went around all different kinds of ways to do this.
Well, why do you think they wanted him so badly?
Well, I, you know, Thatcher, she's It sounded more like a personal thing that Thatcher really wanted this guy, because, you know, he had escaped prior to this, and I think it was, 13, 14 guys or something had escaped from prison over in occupied Ireland, and he was one of the last. I think there was one other guy, and I think he was even captured finally, but I think it was something that they had to make a very strong statement about, that they were not going to allow this to go on anymore. And the funny thing, do you know how this originally started?
How?
With in the courts, the FBI arrested Joe in a bar where he was bartending. He subsequently went to court, and the whole thing was decided, and the judge ruled in his favor that he was it was deemed politically motivated activities over there and blah blah blah, and the judge had said that yes, he can seek asylum, and then they were going to kick it over to the immigration department for his naturalization and whatever, and the government fought that again a second time, and he won again for number two. I think it was three different courts that he went to. The government kept pushing on this, and then when the government couldn't do anything further to get their hands on him, what they did was they rewrote the treaty. They rewrote the treaty with the British, and they took the date and they pushed it back so that it would cover the time that when he was arrested. I mean, to me, as an Irish American, I understand the way things are going, but people pick up the newspaper nowadays and they read about Northern Ireland, and whenever you hear terrorism, always the IRA, blowing kids up and this and that. You know, our papers are so tainted by the British government. They're totally in control, because how many people out there have ever heard of the UDR or the UDF? And they're responsible for as many deaths as the IRA are. But nobody...
You're talking about the Protestant front.
Yeah, right, the Protestant paramilitary groups.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a shame, because if people in this country realize what really is happening over there. I was there. I was in Belfast. And things are real bad over there. It's blatant discrimination. The Catholics... or the nationalists, however you want to refer to them, they're given nothing. These people can't get jobs. So the British government decided, well, we'll fix that so there's no discrimination. So they could no longer ask them their religion. So what they did was they asked them what school they went to. So, you know.
Yeah, of course, tells them their religion.
Yeah, just that would be enough to tell them. I don't know if you're acquainted with the McBride principles about U.S. Owned factories and businesses over there. What we tried to do is we tried to make it a little bit fairer, so that there was an even amount of people hired instead of this 94 percentile rate in other businesses. And the British fought that tooth and nail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a shame that we've been in this position that we're allies with Britain. And Britain can, you know, the history of Great Britain, they could make the Russians as terrible as we thought they were, and Hitler, and you go back in history, the terrible, Britain has their bloody hands on everything, all countries of the world. They've been everywhere from the Middle East, into India, they've been all over, and they've left nothing behind, let alone their, you know, they've exterminated how many different types of people? Considered Aborigines even, the Irish. I mean, that they talk about the potato famine. You know, there was no famine there. There was a failure of the potato crops. But while the people in Ireland were starving, and you hear about the Holocaust and everything, how many people know that 1 million Irish died right there in their own country while they watched the ships filled with the corn and the wheat from their own country sail out, and Britain was making money on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm rattling on, ain't I?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of resentment over there that we don't seem to really be able to get a grip on. We can't identify with that, just like we can't identify with just about anything else in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, these kind of things have happened in a lot of places. Just today I read about 300,000 Sudanese being just pushed into the desert by the Sudanese government.
Yeah.
It's a horrible thing, and horrible things have happened in every single continent you can imagine, including this one. And it's something that people cannot forget and should not forget and should try and teach other people so they can understand where they're coming from. Why do the Palestinians want a homeland? Why does the IRA, involve itself in such actions? You know, people are quick to condemn things without understanding the full picture.
Right.
And, yeah, if you want to condemn something after understanding the full picture, fine, but at least be educated on it.
Oh, even in the Middle East, when Menachem Begin, he was one of the men responsible for blowing up the King David Hotel.
Right, but he wasn't a terrorist. He was a freedom fighter because he won.
They call him a freedom fighter then.
Exactly.
But the Irish are terrorists.
Well, you don't call it...
I remember the British used to paint the picture of they were mindless hooligans and everything. Anybody that would look at the facts of the thing, they would realize that, these people are fighting for something. And I'm not trying to advocate violence, but, you know, to the people there is a war. There is a war going on.
Well, sometimes you got to do something to make yourself be heard. It's a sign of failure when you have to do it. But sometimes it does come to that, and it's a sad thing, and I hope it can be avoided still, even to this day.
I certainly hope so.
All right.
Thanks for your time.
Okay. Good to hear views of world events, because there are so many world events that are going on, and we've got to be aware of them, aware of what's happening. All right. Let's take a few more phone calls. 632-6901. Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah?
I just want to say hello to Ryan and the Jackal and to Jason, and that Jason, I love you, and of course I would marry you.
You know that, Jason. I think Jason knows that.
Yeah, he knows that.
He's over on line 6 here.
And I want to know what you think about witches and the religion of witches.
Witches? Well, there's nothing wrong with witches. Witches are not evil. Witches are—it's a very interesting religion, the whole Wicca thing. You know, I know several people that are into that, and it's kind of—it's kind of like a progressive religion.
It's very spiritual.
It's spiritual. It's kind of like New Age kind of business. In some ways, it's similar to Quakers because they take a non-violent view of various things. But to think that they're possessed by the devil or anything like that is completely crazy. Yeah, and a lot of people think that. And a lot of people think New Age movement is, the devil, too. But, it's not. I mean, I don't know if anything is, but that certainly isn't.
Definitely, because Wicca and everything, and it's for the good of all.
Well, I mean, that's...
They said,
I like to judge a religion based on how it deals with, opposing religions. Not necessarily opposing religions, but different religions. For instance... the people of Islam, how do they deal with Judaism? How do they deal with Catholicism? If they condemn it and say all those people are going to hell, then I have no respect for them. Same thing for any religion. If you can't deal with other religions, if you think yours is the only way, I've lost my respect for you, because obviously it's not the only way. It can't be.
I agree with you totally.
Well, that's good to hear.
And to anyone that wants to know the meaning of life, you gotta watch Monty Python's movie.
Exactly. I wish more people would do that, Do you think people in power have ever seen the meaning of life?
Sometimes I doubt it.
I don't think they ever have. I don't think they've even heard of Monty Python. George Bush never even heard of barcodes.
You gotta watch Life of Brian, too.
Life of Brian, yeah, that's... And Holy Grail, too, why not?
Yeah.
For a bit of fun. So where are you calling from?
Bohemia.
Yeah. Good, okay. Well, I'm sure Jason has heard your message. And we'll hear what comes of it later.
Thanks
for calling. 632-6901 is our telephone number. 632-6500 is our other telephone number. And I want to make an outgoing call, but I can't do it because all the lines are taken, so that's kind of a unique problem. So we'll just keep going. Good morning. Anybody there?
Wait, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Listen, I think part of the problem in the world is... people are basically animals. That's one thing we have to remember. Man is an animal. And we're going to act like animals. You know, everybody talks about we have these higher reasoning, higher functions and stuff like that. We're still animals, no matter how you look at it.
True, but you can also use that to excuse all kinds of barbarism that you really shouldn't be, you know, embarking in.
Yeah, but if you look at mob psychology and mass psychology, you look at how people are going to react, you know, they're going to react as a group, you know.
That's why I try to avoid mobs.
Yeah, that's why you try and avoid the mall mentality.
Exactly.
Let's go to the mall,
yeah.
And can I say hi to people? You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's your show. You do what you want. That's cool. I'd like to say hi to Mark anyway.
Hey, Mark, how you doing? But, yeah, you know, I don't know if that mall so much personifies it, but, you know, just when you find yourself in a gang of people, you lose your individuality.
You got that right.
Yeah, that goes for, you know, for real gangs. That goes for political parties, religious groups, you name it. You know, if you don't have any power as an individual, it's you're in the wrong place, I think.
And another thing about the economy and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I think welfare needs to be reformed.
In what way?
I'm not saying to chop off people that need it.
Uh-huh.
But there's too much abuse of the system.
Yeah, but undoubtedly there is abuse of the system. But do you think it's to such a point that it's
you look at,
it's affecting the economy?
There's facts. You got three generations of people on welfare in different parts of the city.
Uh-huh.
You know, you get the grandparents were on welfare, then their kids, and now the present day kids. You know, things like this need to be lit. You know, if you lose your job and your husband leaves or your wife leaves and you're stuck, you know, you got to go on welfare. I can understand that. But to grow up on welfare, my parents were on welfare, I'm on welfare, my kids are on welfare. You know.
Okay, how do you get people off welfare?
That I'm not sure of.
Okay, that's the question we got to answer, because you can't just get them off welfare by cutting them off and turning them loose. You know, that's not the way to do it. But, I mean, I don't have the answer either.
Well,
but obviously people should be able to be self-sufficient.
If some immigrant can walk in from Russia and get a job and make money and have a place to live,
well,
some person that's already here should be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, but you touched upon a very good point there. If some immigrant from Russia can walk in, some immigrant from Haiti cannot walk in. And they're not welcome here. And even if they do make it in, it's pretty obvious how they'll be treated after they get here, you know, based on the way the U.S. government treats them when they try to get here in the first place.
Right.
You know, they're looked upon with suspicion, so when you got that to deal with, it makes it all the more harder, you know? You
got to change the government. And that's it starts right here with us, being aware of it, and then writing your congressman or, you know, taking action on it and voting. You know, you reaching the younger kids, I saw something... I think there's 25 million eligible voters, 18 to 24.
Yeah.
And less than half are registered, and less than half of that actually voted in the last election.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What do you think is more important, national elections or local elections?
Oh, local elections, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gaffney is going to affect me a lot more than Reagan is.
Uh-huh.
You know, I live out here in Suffolk County, and... whatever he does with property taxes or school taxes, you know, I got to send my kids to school.
Uh-huh.
I got to live here. I don't live in Washington. You know, I'm not a rich Republican. The local government's going to affect me a lot more.
So you would encourage people to vote in their local elections?
I'll definitely get involved.
Okay, we just had one actually last Tuesday. In fact, our county legislator Steve Englebright is now going to be a state assemblyman because of that election.
Got to get involved. You can't just sit on your can.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about this show. You know, people, I'm calling in. I'm trying to get involved. You know?
Oh, we don't sit on our cans here. In fact, we don't even bring our cans here.
I'd like to point out another thing.
Yeah.
Where I work is non-union, and we had some equipment installed by a union. The company that installed it was union.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, I don't know if other unions are like this one, but this was scary. You got one crew, put the thing up on a wall. Another crew ran a wire. Another crew tested a wire. You know, you got five guys standing around, one guy working, two super. You want to talk about how much money gets spent? I don't know if this is a common thing. I just can talk about this one experience I saw. You know, with the way this union handled this equipment installation, testing, and running the lines, and. If the building construction is like this, then as far as the expense that it costs to operate, you know, I have nothing against unions to protect the workers from the abuses that we saw at the end of the 1800s and the beginning of this century, there were a lot of abuses that the unions helped create. I wonder if there are abuses that the unions are causing because this guy does this job and that guy does that job, and if job A isn't done, the people that do job B get paid for standing around waiting for job A to get done, and this...
Uh-huh.
I wonder how much money it cost for all these guys to stand around while one guy tweaked around with his screwdriver, then another guy did the testing, then something didn't work, so the guy with the screwdriver had to get in there again. You got two supervisors standing there watching it, one from his shop and one from his shop. Scary stuff.
Yeah, but in the end, you get a mediocre product.
Sure.
So it makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Well, you know, there's good in unions, but there can also be absurdity in unions, and I think you've illustrated that.
Yeah, you know, you wonder why some things are so damn expensive, and that's why. You know, why are automobiles so expensive? It was proven, I read a study, I think it was in, Popular Science or something way back when, they could make a car. Well, you look at the Hyundai, right?
Uh-huh.
$5,000 or something. They could make a top-of-the-line car for $7,000 or $8,000 and still be making money on it if their manufacturing processes were efficient.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned the Lilco people, you know, they need more money to be competitive. Who are they competing with? They're not, all you got down here is Lilco. They're not competing with anybody. They're supplying energy to one area.
Right, it's absurd, the whole situation.
Yeah.
And I think it's in Korea, the top executives get paid based on what the employees get paid. And if the employees don't get paid much, then the top executives don't get paid much.
We get the highest electric rates in the country, I think it is.
Yeah, we are still number one.
We're number one, and our officials from Lilco need more money. That's brilliant.
Well, they got to pay the electric, too. You know?
That's like Congress voting themselves a raise. We're only making $200,000 a year. We need more money.
I wish people could vote themselves raises, too, and then Congress would have to figure out how to give it to them.
Sure.
That would be fun.
Increase the national debt that much more.
Or vote ourselves a tax decrease or something like that.
How about, we could put it in California. I lived out there. They always had these referendums. Different referendums.
Where was it? Proposition 22 or something? I remember that one.
Yeah, different propositions. That's what it, proposition, referendum.
Yeah, well, same difference.
But there's another thing that people think they can vote themselves anything they want, and then the government's got to provide it because they got to pay for it somehow. Now, you can vote yourself a welfare system, and somebody's got to pay for it. Who's going to pay for it?
Well, you know, it's a question of priorities. Obviously, we don't need as much in the defense budget anymore. We really don't. I mean, but then we have all these people that are out of work because we don't need, you know, them to be building bombs and fighter planes and all that. It seems to me like if we just did a little shuffling, we could solve at least some of the problems.
Oh, sure. Grumman started by changing over. They're building all these step vans and things like that.
Uh-huh, and high-speed trains and low-orbit planes and that kind of thing.
Lots of these contractors can, there's definitely a need, and if they could do it efficiently, I don't want to be Japan bashing, but we could be competitive with the Japanese if we wanted to be.
There's nothing wrong with being competitive, and I don't think, you know, we should stop trying to be competitive. That doesn't mean, you know, Japan bashing, certainly not.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that guy that was an auto salesman who said on, I think it was Nationwide TV, he was interviewed somewhere, and he said, people should buy what they want to buy, basically. He said, you know, people can buy American, they can buy Japanese, it's what they want to buy. And he got fired for saying that.
Yeah, that's scary. So much for free speech.
Anti-American, they
claim. I called in, though, last week. Let's talk about free speech for a second, or free this, or rights, and this and that. I called in last week, and I just mentioned briefly, responsibility goes along with that.
Right.
It's the old, free speech, does that give me the right to shout fire in a theater?
Oh, well, if the theater is on fire, I guess it does give you the right.
If there's no fire.
Ever attaches that, you know? Ever attaches that little clause.
If the theater's on fire, shout fire. If there's no fire, you don't shout fire in a theater and create a panic.
Right.
You have to take your freedoms and your rights and use them responsibly. And, you know, this right to free speech, you ever read the Bill of Rights and see what it actually says?
Well, do you have one in front of you?
No, I wish I did.
Okay, well...
Well, the right to bear arms, there's another one.
Well, that's been misinterpreted in various ways.
Oh, sure, they're not talking
about
the individual.
Keep in mind, when you know, the right to bear arms was first mentioned, you know, there was a country that they were breaking away from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously people had to defend themselves against various hostile forces. Those same hostile forces are not in existence today, and I don't really think that's what they intended, is for everybody to go around carrying guns.
That's right. To keep in keeping with a militia, it talks about having a militia.
Mm-hmm.
People shall have the right to bear arms.
Right, and I think by having the Suffolk County Police Department, that's how we bear our arms. You know, that's one interpretation. It may not be your interpretation, it may not be somebody else's interpretation, but I believe that, you know, if it's not how it was meant, then that's how it should be now. You know, and there's nothing wrong with saying that.
Yeah. So what we have with our triad system is Congress makes a law based on their interpretation, then the Supreme Court interprets the law based on their interpretation. Constitutional, and then Congress has to make a new law. But they're making up laws based on what they think.
Right.
And it's very subjective. You know, it's like judging a figure skating competition.
Yeah, that's pretty subjective too, I guess.
Yeah, the whole thing's subjective. You look at the times when they wrote it, look at the 1770s when they wrote these things and what they actually wrote and what they intended by it, and then you look at today and we got two different things. That's the way it goes.
That's true. Society that does not constantly change.
Speaking of government, did you ever read Starship Trooper by Robert Heinlein?
I never read that one, no.
Or The Moon is a Harsh Mistress?
I don't remember if I read that one.
There are two science fiction novels,
yeah,
among many that Heinlein wrote. But in his story...
He's kind of pompous, I think, but never mind that.
Well, that's him, but he's also dead. But in
yeah,
his
that's true.
Stories, he proposes different types of governments. Not that we could ever really make major changes to our government today, but if you get a chance, read those and see what you think about the ways, especially The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, you know. In the book, the moon is, a revolution has just taken place, and the leaders of the revolution are in a committee to make up their new government, and the one of the leaders says, hey, you know, just because there's a two-party system on Earth doesn't mean we have to do it. Maybe we should have a king. Maybe we should have something else. You know, don't get stuck in a rut.
Exactly, and we are stuck in a rut here. That I can attest to.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, and the reason we get stuck in a rut is because we're so big and we try to move so monolithically all the time. You know, it's hard to move when you're huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should move little bits at a time and try things out and experiment, but we don't do that enough. So hopefully that'll change.
Yeah. One thing I like about your show, I think the questions sometimes are more important than the answers.
Yeah, we leave a lot of open-ended statements because a lot of this you got to decide for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to be preachy here.
When in doubt, go to the mall.
Well, that's a good saying. What is that, a bumper sticker?
I don't know.
Sounds like a good one.
What everybody talking about the mall before. Speaking of the mall, did you see that... there was a virtual reality game there that my friend, I didn't get.
Yeah, I heard about it. In fact, it's the same virtual reality game that was traveling around the city.
Right.
It was at, I forget where, someplace. You know, the club in the city that used to be a church, and looks like a church now, but it was there.
I know which one you mean, but I don't know the name.
Yeah, I forget the name, but it was at Smith Haven Mall. Is it there anymore?
I don't know. I didn't get to get over there.
Yeah, I used that in England. When I was in England, they were just introducing that. And it's quite
about the whole thing.
It's quite an experience. It's where you have to shoot other people that are also playing the same game.
Yep. It's a Stephen King, based on a Stephen King novel or short story or something. There's a commercial for a movie now about a Stephen King type of virtual reality where people get trapped in the game or something. I don't know if it's anything like Tron, but there's a virtual reality bad guy, and I guess it's some kind of adventure starting Friday at a theater near you.
Sounds like Brainstorm, too.
Yeah.
Kind of a mixture, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, certainly not a unique idea, but it is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's you should check it out. Everybody should check out virtual reality at some point. It makes you dizzy, because you feel like you're in a particular world, and you have this heavy thing on your head, and you turn your head, and you can see different landscapes and all that. But it's kind of neat. Primitive. It's definitely primitive at this stage, but... it's getting there.
Give it time. Give the Japanese the...
yeah, well, whoever can do it first.
I'm sure they'll develop it.
new from Nintendo.
I think, you know, for all the Japan bashing that's been going on, I think we've done pretty well by the Japanese as far as, you know, getting our personal computers and getting cheap memory and building our businesses based on their technology. You know, we're doing okay.
But their technology, that's the thing. The technology, for the most part, was developed here in the United States. VCRs, for example.
Right, but it was developed here, but it was not marketed here.
They mass-produced it. That's their thing.
And if they hadn't mass-produced it, it wouldn't have been cheap enough for people to afford to get it and use it, you see?
Now that it's cheap enough, people bought it, and the American stuff wasn't cheap enough.
It's like, you know, picture phones. They were introduced back in the 1960s, but they were never made available, never made cheap enough for people to want to get them, so nobody got them. You know, the same thing could have happened with VCRs.
It definitely could have happened with VCRs, but, you know, what are you going to do? Not buy a VCR because it's not American?
Right, it's absurd. So if somebody is able to produce the idea and make it affordable, you know, what's wrong with that?
And then there's another thing about licensing. You look at some of these Japanese cars, and they had different statistics on the news the other night. 94% of the parts were made in the United States, and 100% of these particular cars are manufactured in the United States, and it's a Japanese car.
Yeah, they have there's Toyota plants in this country.
Sure.
So Americans are employed, certainly.
And then they had something about RCA equipment, Radio Corporation of America, made in Mexico. We're not bashing Mexicans, but this is RCA, Radio Corporation of America. This is part of their name.
Well, that's because Mexico doesn't really make any profit off of it. We get cheap labor out of the Mexicans, but they don't really get anything back for it.
We're getting cheap labor out of the Japanese.
Yeah, but they're using it to improve their economy, you see, and to build their society. But that's not happening in Mexico for whatever reasons.
Well, I don't know whose fault that is or if that's even a problem.
Well, I just think we have more control over the situation there. You know, we are directly in charge of hiring workers in Mexican plants to do certain things, whereas the Japanese are the ones that are hiring their own workers to build things.
Well, at least they're hiring their workers. So, you know, that's another thing. They're willing to work. And also over there, you got to understand, they work a 10-hour day at least.
Right.
And they have a different... Their whole culture, you know, how old is the United States? A little over 200 years?
A little over 200 years, yeah.
Well, this is Japan, the 5,000-year-old culture.
They're up there. They're up there pretty highly. Everybody else seems to be up there, too.
You're just young upstart babies as far as culture is concerned.
True. And we're being dealt with in a rather patient way, I think, by most of the world.
Most of the world.
Anyway, listen, I want to move on to some more calls, but it's been very interesting.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye.
632-6901, 632-6500. But first, we don't want to hear that noise. We want to hear this. Yes, it's the return of yet another feature. And while we won't be doing exactly the same things that we've done before, we'll be doing something in a similar vein, where we reach out somewhere in the world and confuse somebody. Maybe an operator, or maybe just a normal, average person. Now, in Doonesbury over the last couple of days, there's been reference to a Jerry Brown 800 number, which we're now going to call and see if it actually exists. It's ringing. This number must have gotten thousands of phone calls.
Thank you for calling Brown's President. All of our agents are currently busy on other lines. Please hold for the next available agent.
Okay, we're now on hold. If people have seen Doonesbury over the last 2 days, they will have seen reference to 800 numbers by Gary Trudeau. And the unusual thing is that they actually give out the number. I might as well give it out, too. It's 800-426-1112. In fact, the punchline of today's... I'll get to that later, I guess.
Jerry Brown for President.
Yes, hi. I'm calling from a radio station out on Long Island, and we were actually just calling this number to see if it really existed. We saw it in Doonesbury.
Right.
Have you been getting a lot of phone calls because of that?
Yeah.
Really?
Lots and lots and lots and lots.
Really? Is that considered a good thing or kind of an annoyance?
No, because this is the 800 information line, you know, so that's good. We've gotten a lot of money.
But yeah, don't you have to pay for all these calls when people call the 800 number?
I'm sorry?
Don't you have to pay for all these calls when people call you?
Yeah, but we've gotten far more money than you know, that will cost to pay for the calls. So
really?
That's great, you know.
Okay, well, now you've got an on-air audience here. Maybe you could just sort of give the spiel for Jerry Brown. What do you tell people that call you?
Well, we're just the information number. We send out information packets to him. I mean, to them, rather. And
right.
If they want to pledge something, there's a pledge envelope in there, and they can send it back.
I see. And is Jerry Brown the only candidate that's got an 800 number like this?
As far as I know, because he raises his own money. He doesn't take corporate funds or special interest groups' money. That's the whole thrust of his campaign.
Uh-huh.
He said the whole system has been corrupted by that.
So he only takes money from people, not from huge corporations.
Yeah, the most he will take from any one source is $100.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted to pledge $1,000, you wouldn't take it. You wouldn't be allowed to.
Right. Tom Selleck recently sent $1,000 into him, and he sent it back and said, please just give me $100 because that's the most I will take.
Really? That's admirable. Do you have any idea how much he's raised so far?
I don't know. I don't know because we're not the Brown campaign. We're the 800 number.
Right. And where are you located?
We're in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. I see. Okay. Is there any kind of address you can give us or anything for our listeners to contact?
We can give them the Brown headquarters.
Okay, what's that?
That's P.O. Box 17100. That's Los Angeles, California, 917.
Okay, and...
And you're in Long Island?
Yeah, we're at WUSB, Stony Brook, New York.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, every little bit helps.
Yeah, well, we just, you know, we saw the comic strip in 2 days in a row.
Yeah, somebody said, I talked to somebody in New York, and somebody said the Village Voice had the number in it, you know, this last week or something, too.
Not surprised. Why do you think Gary Trudeau has been mentioning it in his comic strip?
I don't know. Did you see the strip?
Yes, I did.
Okay, it wasn't exactly in support. It's kind of like a lampoon, really. Was that your perception of it? I mean, I didn't.
It's definitely poking fun. Today's punchline has a picture of kind of like a poster. It says Jerry Brown because trained operators are standing by, and I guess you're one of the trained operators.
Yeah.
And then it has one of those like when you're renting a house or looking for something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or people that are looking for day work and that sort of thing.
Right. You rip off the phone number, and you can see somebody has ripped off one of the phone numbers, but you see all the other ones that haven't been ripped, so you get a pretty clear idea of what the 800 number is.
Right, yeah. Well, did you see the first one?
Yeah, the one yesterday.
Yeah, with Mike just sitting there reading the paper, and the punchline is, you know, why do people call the 800? Because people care, and then Mike's got his nose in the paper. He's not even listening. I mean, that was my perception of, I mean, you know,
uh-huh.
So I don't know. I mean, he's not saying he's, you know, he's just giving out the 800. I mean, you know, you don't know where Gary's stand on the whole thing. I think,
no.
You know, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah,
was great,
well, you know? I think it's kind of a...
I mean, is he for Jerry Brown or not? Who knows?
Right.
We don't care. We got a lot of money out of his giving out the 800 number, so that's the important thing.
Well, he can't really say for sure where he stands because that would kind of taint his
view.
No,
I know,
So.
Yeah. But I thought it was brilliant because Jerry Brown is the only one who raises his own money, excuse me, in his campaign. Pardon me. And
yeah.
So, I don't know, is Trudeau saying he appreciates that, or I don't know, but I just thought it was brilliant, but as you say, he really can't say where he stands, because he's part of the media, and he would have to give equal time to the rest of the candidates, I suppose, so I just thought it was brilliant, you know.
Okay, now, people who want to call that 800 number, they can call that to make a donation, you take credit cards, things like that?
Oh, we don't deal with credit cards,
so
that. What we do is send out information, and inside is a pledge envelope, and they return their contribution to the national headquarters in Santa Monica.
I see. Interesting. Okay, well, what's your first name?
My name's Julie.
Julie, it's been very informative talking to you.
Thanks for calling. It's great. I mean, you know, hey, give out the address.
We'd like to see how this, People's Campaign actually does.
Yeah, it's a grassroots campaign. He's got a national grassroots campaign. And watch him in Maine. We did polling in Maine all day today, and he has a lot of support.
Yeah, what do you estimate he's going to poll?
Well, I don't know. It could be as much as a third of the votes, you know, so... We'll see. You have to wait and see. The caucuses are today, so, and he's been up there, and then he goes to South Dakota. They have a primary the 25th.
Uh-huh. Great. All right, well, if you see him, tell him we say hi, and good luck to you.
Okay, well, thank you.
In the process there.
Thank you for calling.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And that number, again, if you want to speak to somebody like Julie, is 1-800-426-1112. And while we may not have actually confused an operator, we did take part in the political process a little bit tonight. Jerry Brown's 800 number. Hey, let's see if we can still confuse an operator somewhere by asking 800 information if they have the number for Jerry Brown. Now, we won't say it's a Jerry Brown political office. We'll just say Jerry Brown, you know, like he's one of the guys. See what they come up with here.
Directory, Cindy.
Yes, I need the number for Jerry Brown, please.
President?
He's not the president yet.
Jerry Brown for president?
Yes, I agree with that.
Thank you.
The toll-free number is 800-426-1112.
I like the way she says 1-1-1.
800-426-1112.
Okay, well, that's enough Jerry Brown promotion for tonight, but I think that's kind of interesting when you see a candidate actually reach out to the people like that. Doesn't take anything over $100. That counts all of us out here at USB, because we don't give small donations, we give big donations. Oh, well. 632-6901 is our number if you want to give us a donation. We certainly won't try to stop you. Good morning.
Oh, hey, my goodness. Just before I fell asleep.
Oh, that's good. I like to get people before they fall asleep.
Wow, you got to put a cap on some of those yappers you got calling in.
Well, we got some yappers, but they yap away at interesting things sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they can be boring, but sometimes they're interesting.
Okay.
So when they're boring, I just leave the room.
Okay, well, listen, actually what I'm calling for is some help.
Okay.
And I guess a couple months ago, a friend of mine who I call Freak got me into, introduced me into, I guess, the alternative music kind of thing.
Okay.
Begged me over to Lollapalooza and all that good stuff. And I love it. You know, I think the stuff is great. But what I'm looking for is it's very difficult to find somebody who knows the names of the various bands out there. And what I'm calling for, do you know anybody who's like, let's say, Nine Inch Nails, but not the Nine Inch Nails you would hear, let's say, on their CD, but yet, like, today's interpretation of their, like, a Nine Inch Nails that you saw at a Lollapalooza, not what is on their album. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I know what you're asking for. I don't know if I can necessarily help. We do have lots of people here at the station that, you know, that are walking encyclopedias on this kind of thing, and all you have to do really is listen.
Right.
Especially around midnight, almost any day. And you'll hear all kinds of alternative, you know, music being played. And, you know, people can guide you to bands that you never even dreamed existed. Nine Inch Nails is you know, the Beatles compared to some of this.
Exactly. You know what it is? I don't really listen. I happen to catch this. And a lot of people say, oh, no, they play some real freaky music on that station and go listen. I mean, I don't know. I guess
we play the freakiest of music.
Yeah.
You can tune in the afternoons, weekday afternoons between about 3 and 5:30, and also usually late night, around midnight or so, and sometimes in the evening as well.
Right.
And we have all kinds of programs for, you know, different styles of music, but a lot of very knowledgeable people.
Right.
Unfortunately, I'm just not that knowledgeable in that particular area.
Okay. Hey, well, let me ask you one thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of anything called, I saw this on a show, TV 55 had it on. It was like, matter of fact, it's on tonight, or it was on tonight. A show called Night Flight, and it was before they changed their format over to just videos. They had a little clip of something on there called The Church of the Subgenius.
Yeah, Bob.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I figured you'd know something about that.
That's out of Houston.
What? Yeah, what is that all about? And how do I get a copy of that Freakazoid videotape?
Well, good question. How do you... Well, let's see, maybe you called Houston information, which I believe is 713-555-1212, ask them for a number for the Church of Subgenius. That might get you a number for them, and that might lead you to some more information. I do know over at KPFA they have a radio show that's over in San Francisco, so that doesn't really help you much either. We don't have anything on this station, but we do have people that are quite knowledgeable about that. at various times, it's old. You know, it's been around for quite some time.
It's kind of like
a parody of a religion, but it's gotten so big that it's not a parody anymore.
I know. There's always a freak out there willing to buy anything. You know.
Right. They say some rather interesting things. You know.
You know, it's funny. Nightline. Ted Koppel did the hour long thing on the L. Ron Hubbard bit with the Scientology.
Right.
And it almost paralleled, at least what I gathered from the little snippet of the Subgenius, in that I don't know if you saw it or
I saw it, I saw just a bit of it where the guy was saying, "Well, where does all the money go?"
Right.
And he was being very defensive about that, and I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, but did you listen to the actual origins of the base of what the whole you know, the foundation of the so-called religion is all about?
No, I missed that part.
Oh, It's really nuts. Supposedly, L. Ron Hubbard, or the basis, over a million years ago or something like that, aliens came down and were captured by their, I don't know, some kind of superior beings and put them in these volcanoes. And as the tectonic plates moved around, these aliens vaporized and got themselves on these little particles, which are on us today. So we have to go. We have to give them all sorts of money for all their various gadgets that they give you to analyze yourself and rid yourselves of these alien being particles, which were hampering you to ultimate truth or something like that. Pretty crazy stuff.
That's pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah. Freak.
Wow.
Yeah,
he said that on Nightline?
Yeah, yeah. Basically. Well, it was their intro piece with that guy Forrest Sawyer.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, those guys, they give it a heavy hand, you know, if they look down on something. They can pretty much slam you down right at the beginning.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it, you know, talking about aliens a million years ago.
Yeah.
Most people would probably ridicule something like that.
Sure. Okay, that's really it. I got to hit the sack.
Okay, you do that.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks for calling. All right, we're going to try and wail through these calls as quickly as we can. Good morning.
Yes, I'd like to hear your impression of a submachine gun.
Well, it usually starts by pushing a button. Whoops. I pushed a button. But imagine the sound of that pushing button followed by a rapid fire noise, and that would be my imitation of a submachine gun. Good morning. Anybody there? No? Okay, good morning.
I need a boiler.
Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hi, Eric.
How you doing?
I've been on the phone about 50 minutes of ringing.
50 minutes of ringing, huh?
Yeah, I have like tinnitus in my left ear now.
What do you think of phone companies that won't allow you to let the phone ring for 50 minutes? They'll cut it off after like 4 minutes and say, please try again because we're not making any money off you.
Right, yeah, you're just using our equipment for nothing.
Yeah, but you know, you're not using their equipment really until you open up a voice path.
Yeah, but doesn't the ring itself, that use voltage to...
It uses something, but it doesn't use that much, and it's been like that for decades.
It's not like mechanical ringers anymore.
No, it's been like that for decades, and it hasn't caused them a problem then. Why should it suddenly cause them a problem now?
Exactly. Like, why should touch tone cost you something when it actually saves a telephone company?
Oh, you're right in there. You know the facts here. Of course, touch tone doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, it saves them money.
Exactly. Wow, you're an educated person. I'm proud to talk to somebody like that.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to tell Chris to get back to work.
Yeah, Chris, get back to work.
And anyway, I wanted to run something by you. I have an idea for national health care.
Okay.
And I was thinking about this. Like, I don't know why nobody else who's in politics, in office, has come up with anything like this. But what if you were to have, let's say, free medical schools, similar to the military, where you require someone, you give them either a very reduced rate medical school or free medical school with an obligatory service period of double whatever it takes for them to go to school. You double that and you have them do mandatory service.
Sort of like what the guy in Northern Exposure has to do.
I'm not familiar with Northern.
Well, it's a program where this doctor from New York has to serve in Alaska for something like 4 years to pay back his medical school debt. He's not too happy about it, but he, you know, it's made a hit show out of it anyway.
Oh, yeah, something similar exactly to that, where you can have like a double-tier kind of medical service where you have all the private practitioners who are already, you know, in business and such, catering to their clients who are able to afford their own private and the national healthcare system, where you have doctors who are obligated to provide for their education, for what it's done, you know, for what the country has done for them by providing them the opportunity to go to school.
Well, you know, that's a good idea. It solves two problems. A, the problem of national health. We don't have any. We do need national health of some sort. And B, the problem of education. And education is a commodity here. Poor people cannot get the same education as rich people. Seems like we're killing two birds with one stone here.
Yeah, I don't see why, you know, something like this couldn't be into an operating plan.
Well, maybe because people don't want it to be. Certain people don't want it to be. I don't know. I can't think of any other reason.
I mean, if a doctor, then let's say somebody who actually did, you know, go through and then they decided that they didn't want to fulfill their commitment, you yank their license.
Right.
You know.
Or you kill them or something. I don't know. Something that's unpleasant.
Something unpleasant, right. Or you require them to pay for their school and pull their license. Or, you know, there are ways of enforcing it so that if somebody was to, you know, try and treat people substandard or do something so that they could get out of their commitment, then they wouldn't have a license, or they would be forced to pay for their education.
I think an important aspect to all this is to not treat the service as something negative, but rather as something positive, a developmental stage.
Yeah, and especially like with the cutback, like on military bases and stuff.
Right.
They could utilize bases very easily, convert them into medical colleges. You know, you have the dormitories, you have the facilities. Stuff like that is already in place.
Right.
No.
Good idea. I suggest you, you write some letters about this. At least come up with a reason why not.
Yeah.
You know, it makes all the sense in the world to me.
Also, one quick thing on the Persian Gulf.
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible that the whole thing was a conspiracy from George Bush to, number one, pay back his oil buddies in form of an extremely huge windfall in profits for that period of time? Number two, shore up the sagging defense industries with this need for, in the face of the crumbling of communism, to have this new threat, this enemy that's always, a constant enemy out there. And what was the other?
Well, I think, we still have the enemy. That's a good point. The enemy has not yet disappeared, so we can always go back again if we need to. Yeah, I mean, I think there's conspiracies galore here.
Oh, and yeah, the other thing was that, with our vast intelligence networks, and we already knew what was happening, he was massing on the borders, and our ambassador, Jean Kirkpatrick?
No, it wasn't Jean Kirkpatrick. I forget what her name was, but it wasn't that.
Yeah, okay, but she had basically given him, green light by saying, well, this is your guy's affair. It's not really our concern what happened.
Right. I mean, you can't blame it all on one person. Obviously,
but
she was reflecting some kind of a policy. Whether she was being tricked herself, that's something we don't know.
How could we have possibly ignored for 2 weeks the fact that he was massing up all these troops and then just all of a sudden say, oh, wow, we underestimated that he was going to actually do this.
See, the sad thing is we probably won't know for at least another 10 years what really went on. But all we can do now is speculate. But, a lot of people tell us we're not supposed to speculate about things like this. Well, that's too bad. We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I can't understand. It makes perfect sense that this was payback time for all his oil buddies that put him in office. And, they made obscene profits.
Oh, yeah, and the gas prices have not gone down.
Exactly. The gas prices have never come back to where, they were, even though the price of oil itself has, slowly eroded back from the highs of during the war.
Right. Stock market is harder than it's ever been before, I remember the day Saddam invaded, the gas prices shot up.
Yeah.
And, the logic there was, well, we've got to buy the oil, and the oil prices have naturally gone up. But when the war was over and the gas prices started going down, they didn't use the same logic. Shouldn't the oil prices be cheaper? Well, yeah, but now we've got to keep them up for another reason.
Yeah.
It's filthy, the whole thing. Listen, sir, we're out of time.
Hey.
But thanks for calling.
Bye.
All right. That's going to do it for another edition of Brain Damage. The program comes your way once a week, every Saturday night, Sunday morning kind of thing. Stay tuned for The Big Guy, Rock and Roll Circus. I'll be back again hopefully next week. Till then, everybody take care, read the papers, and stay out of trouble, but not too much trouble. Good night.